Hi, my name is Allie Mast. If the term mental illness makes you squirm a little bit, you're definitely not alone. But after living with mental illness for over 20 years, I'm proud to help break down those walls of stigma. When I became a mom in 2017, I realized just how desperate the need was to support people, especially moms, in their mental health journey. It's gonna get a little awkward around here, but cultivating change always is. Welcome to The Mentally Ill Mama. Hello, and welcome to another episode of The Mentally Ill Mama. My name is Allie Mast, and I am the creator and host of this podcast. So last week, we talked about some of my personal experience in IOP, or Intensive Outpatient Program. Today is part two, where I'm going to go over a little more of just like some of the things that we cover and talked about in IOP. So not necessarily like my personal experience, which I'm sure I will still share, but we're going to just talk more about like what kind of things do you actually talk about and learn in a program like this. And again, disclaimer, this is just based off of the program I was in. I have only ever been in this one program, so this is not like specifics on every program. Every program, I'm sure, is different to varying degrees. This is just about the program I was in. If you have any questions, please DM me on Instagram. It's at The Mentally Ill Mama. I am happy to answer any questions, but I will not be saying the name or names of people in the program or anything like that on the podcast. So as I said a little bit last week, it is from 9 to 12, and you go three mornings a week on weekdays. So it's three different hour-long sessions that are usually a little under an hour, and you get a little break in between. So they are all group sessions. First group is kind of just like a check-in. So we all sit in a big circle, and somebody that works there is leading the discussion, and everybody has an opportunity to share. And if you choose to share, you are asked to share two mental health wins, one thing you're struggling with, skills that you've been using, and what your emotion is that day. It is never forced to participate, but it is a great place to realize that you are not alone. It is also a time when you get to offer help to other people that are in the program, which is really cool. So people can give you advice, you can give other people advice, and it's just, I just think it's so important to be able to talk openly about that kind of stuff and realize that you're not being judged for it is pretty big, I think. So after first group, we would have like maybe a 5-10 minute break. They have snacks and drinks and stuff, and obviously we need to use the restroom, have a smoke break, whatever, and then come back. And usually we would start with a quote and we would discuss the quote, and then that would lead us into our topic for that day. And then groups two and three would be related to that topic. And a lot of times we would do some kind of an activity. Some days were more heavy on note taking, but everything would pertain to that topic of the day. So I'm just going to read off some of the, we had a whole list of them. So these are all the topics that are covered in second and third groups. Anger, anxiety, boundaries, choosing different paths, cognitive distortions, that's a big one, communication, conflict resolution, coping skills, fear of failure, hey, that's me, goal setting, managing change, managing emotions, obstacles and solutions, overcoming the impossible or growth mindset, perspective, pitfalls, problem solving, rat trap, relationships, resilience, self-care, social support, stigma, stress, taking action, and turning over a new leaf. Some topics would be more, like you would get more from certain topics than others, but I really, like my goal every day was to go in open-minded, because even if it was a topic that I was like, I don't think this really pertains to me, I always took something away from it. And sometimes I realized, oh, this actually is more relevant to me than I would have ever guessed. One day, we also talked a lot about warning signs. And what this means is like warning signs that your mental health is getting really bad. Like things are getting to a place where you're probably going to need to reach out and get some help. So obviously, this is not an exhaustive list of all possible warning signs, but it's a pretty good list of probably the most common ones. So I'm going to read these and then I'll tell you what we did after that. So here are the most common warning signs. Unusual drop in functioning, isolating and avoiding others, negative thinking, crying more frequently, difficulty concentrating, problems with memory, loss of interest, apathy, loss of motivation, racing thoughts, increased risk-taking, rapid mood changes, increased impulsiveness, feeling disconnected, not taking care of yourself, eating more than usual, eating less than usual, sleeping more than usual, sleeping less than usual, uncontrollable worries. So we were asked to put a little check mark next to any of them that we were experiencing or had experienced that were warning signs that our mental health was really going downhill. And then we were asked to make a list of our top three warning signs. And these are the signs that most often happen first for you specifically. So the ones that I identified were isolating, hyper-focusing on a problem. Like I want to fix the problem, but I want to ignore the emotions that go with it. And sleeping and eating less. So for me, like writing that out, if one or more of those three things are going on, it's a reminder that I might need some additional support. I might need to do some reflecting. I might need to change some things in my life to take off some stress off my plate. It's been hard currently because I am still really struggling with the sleeping and eating less part. And there was something that happened with a healthcare professional that triggered the eating stuff for me. And I kind of think that the eating and sleeping stuff go hand in hand for me. So I am still, it's still a little worrisome to me that I'm struggling with that. But I am putting in some effort, I would say, to work on that. Another thing I wanted to go over that we talked about one day, one of the topics was self-care. And, you know, it's kind of a buzzword or a buzz term. And I feel like if you read any like magazine, it's like top 10 ways to practice self-care. And it's like, give yourself a facial, go get a massage, take a walk, which are not bad things, but it's just like one facet of it. So we learned that self-care is something that you can do in all areas of your life. And it was broken down into these areas: physical, emotional, spiritual, professional, social, financial, and psychological. A lot of us focus on more of like the physical and maybe emotional part of it. So some physical things are like making sure you're eating and sleeping like the amount that you need to be taking care of yourself, personal hygiene, taking your meds, exercise, going to the doctor, things like that. And then for emotional, it's more like therapy, journaling. But I think a lot of us just stick with those two things. And some of us only do the physical stuff because it's not as vulnerable. And then the rest of them, I think some of them I wouldn't have even thought of, like financial. A lot of people struggle with their finances and it does cause a lot of stress. And thinking about budgeting and stuff like that in terms of self-care kind of helps you have a different perspective of like, this isn't some like rigid set of rules I have to follow. These are things that I'm aiming for because I know that it's going to alleviate stress in my life and help me feel more stable, which is pretty important, right? I also really liked that they added professional in there because I know for me, I don't have a like normal job right now. and haven't in a while, but I always struggled with like having good boundaries with my coworkers and feeling like I had to say yes, feeling guilty for taking off, things like that. And seeing that as a form of self-care, like you can be really good at your job and also say, hey, I work till 5 and I'm not staying after that. And that's okay. It's actually probably good. And one last thing, it goes with self-care. This was a page of notes that I took during this day. And it was 10 self-care myths. And I thought that this was a good thing to cover. For me, I have worked through a lot of these myths that I did believe. But I think that so many of us have them just because of how self-care is talked about in our culture. Is usually like related to these myths. And so it's important to realize that just because you have been given a message or like been told that this is how something is, you can question that. All right, so here are the myths. Number one, self-care is always pampering. Kind of like I said, like getting a facial, massage, shopping, going out to eat, things like that. Those things can definitely be self-care, but that is not like what self-care is. And also, I think people that don't have the financial resources or the time, like, can feel like, well, I guess I'm screwed because I'm never going to be able to do those things. So that's a big myth. Self-care is not always pampering, is the truth. Number two, self-care takes a long time. It has to be this, like, big thing, like going to the spa for a weekend, or like, I'm gonna like totally deep clean my whole bedroom or stuff like that. Self-care can be like, I'm gonna do a 5-minute guided meditation and I'm gonna just work on my breathing. 5 minutes. Self-care could be, you know what, I feel a lot better when I take a few minutes to just like do my hair and makeup at the beginning of the day. And so I'm gonna do that as a form of self-care. Or self-care could be, you know what, I actually hate doing my makeup every day and I think I just want to stop. I think I don't need to and I'm not doing it for me, so I'm going to stop doing that. Now you just saved yourself a little time in the morning. Okay, next one, number three, self-care is expensive. This kind of goes with the pampering one. Self-care does not have to be expensive. Self-care could be, I am going to make sure I keep my living room tidy and at 9 o'clock every night, I'm going to make my favorite cup of hot tea and watch a show, because that is just like a really nice way for me to like relax and calm down at the end of the day. Not expensive. Number four, self-care is always relaxing and fun. That was a big one for me because I always felt like self-care was like taking a bubble bath, you know, like more like personal hygiene-y stuff, or going to get a massage. What I have recognized is ways of self-care for me is like getting an appropriate amount of sleep, making sure I take my meds every day, scheduling and going to doctor appointments. Those for me are not like fun things, but they are definitely important. Number five, self-care is immediately gratifying. That is so true that a lot of us believe that. And that's something I've been working on because I've realized that having a fairly consistent meditation practice helps with my stress. But I often have the mindset of, if I do this meditation, I am going to feel like a peaceful goddess and everything is going to be amazing. And the reality is that if I do like a 5 to 10 minute meditation, I usually feel like, I don't know, it could be 25%, it could be 50%, it could be more. Like 25-50% less anxious than I did at the start of it. And that counts. That is awesome. It doesn't have to be this all or nothing thing. And also, like, self-care is not immediately gratifying in that I need to take my meds every day. And it might take several weeks plus before I'm really feeling the full effects of them. But I need to do it consistently so that I can experience that relief, you know? Okay, number six, self-care is selfish. Woo, woo, woo. I definitely felt this for a long time. Growing up in the church environment that I did, I was taught that you always put yourself last. And so the term self-care. The first time I ever heard it, I definitely thought it was selfish. And I've kind of been challenging, like, what does it even mean to be selfish? Because selfishness is not, it's not like just putting yourself first. That's not selfish. It's selfish to put yourself first at like the expense of other people, you know? It's not as black and white as I thought that it was. And I'm realizing that when I don't take care of myself, it deeply affects me and the people around me. And taking care of myself is not just so that other people can also be taken care of. It is also for me. I've always been bothered by the verbiage like, you need to fill your own cup so that you can fill other people's. And it's like, can I also just fill my cup though, because I deserve to have my cup filled? You know, like it can be both, right? It doesn't just have to be one or the other. All right, number 7, self-care is for women. This was an interesting one because as a woman, I guess I didn't think too much about it. But self-care is often targeted as like towards like people's femininity. So like going, getting your hair done, your nails done, things that are like seen as more feminine in our culture, I should say. But it's definitely targeted at women, like, you know, stereotyping that women are more emotional, more in touch with their feelings. So like women are more likely to go to therapy, things like that. And I think that it's really, really, really important for men to realize that taking care of themselves is not like a intrinsically feminine thing. I don't know. It is interesting because I didn't really think about it until we were going over this list. And I was like, oh, huh. And there was one of the people that was in the program with me was a guy who was like college age. And I just was like, it's so cool and refreshing to see somebody, like a guy, realizing that they need some mental health support at a young age and like not having like shame about it and just doing it. And it was very, very encouraging to me. Number 8, self-care is a set amount. I'm gonna be super honest, I don't remember what that one means. It's a set amount. Because number 9, it says self-care is a singular event. And that kind of seems like the same thing to me. Maybe it just means like a set amount of time. I don't know. This is real, folks. I wrote down my list and my handwriting's all nice and everything, but I didn't add to that one. Okay, number 9. Self-care is a singular event. Like I'm going to go to this massage. I am going to go to this doctor appointment this one time, and that is self-care. Self-care is like a practice, right? So it's something that you need to do consistently for it to benefit you. Not that doing something one time won't benefit you, but it's not going to be a long-lasting benefit. And the last one, number 10, self-care has to be earned. Well, I say, screw that. But also that is something I struggle with a lot, which is why I say screw that. I struggle with feeling like I have to earn everything. So I think that ties into when my mental health is poor, I am not eating as much. And I think it's because I feel like I don't deserve to eat because I do have, with my OCD, it can act very similarly to an eating disorder. And so there's definitely a lot of disordered eating, disordered thoughts around food and all that going on. And I'm trying to push through that. I deserve to eat every day, multiple times a day. I deserve to find pockets of rest every day, multiple times a day. And also, I want to add that this isn't about perfection. Of course, there are going to be days, like periods of time where it's just not an option. And that's okay. Like there are going to be seasons of time where maybe you're moving. And I still think that we can find ways to incorporate self-care no matter what the circumstances. But realistically, you're just not going to have as much time as you did before. And that's okay. It's not about like doing something perfectly. It's not about that at all. It's about finding ways to do things for yourself that like help your mental health. that help you feel like yourself, that help you feel not so bogged down by life or your mental illnesses or whatever it is you got going on. So I just thought that was a cool list. And it's just an example of like, that was part of one day that we talked about that. So I learned a lot. You learn a ton. Even as somebody that literally went through this program before, I still learned a lot going through it the second time. And it just really benefited me. Now, nothing is perfect. And I always want to be aware to not like talk about things through rose-colored glasses, right? The beginning was hard. It's hard to feel safe and comfortable with a new group of people, especially when you're going there to work on some things that you're probably like not super comfortable talking about or sharing with just anybody. And so there is a level of discomfort at the beginning for a lot of people. Personalities might not mesh with everybody. That's normal. That's human. And when we did different activities that went with these topics, it was stressed that like these activities are probably going to bring up feelings of stress. And the reason that we do them is because you get to work on practicing your skills in a safe environment so that you can get confident practicing these skills and be able to apply it in your daily life. And it was really cool because there were times in an activity where I was like, I hate this so much. This is not fun. I don't feel like I'm going to get this. Like there was some goal and I felt like it was not attainable. And when I was able to take a step back and just kind of be a little more go with the flow, we eventually succeeded at our goal. And I learned that I can push through those feelings. And those feelings do not mean that I automatically fail, you know? So it's cool. Yeah, I honestly think the program is awesome. I think anybody that's like, you know, you've been going through depression for a long time and it just doesn't seem to be getting better, like this might be a really good option for you. Or you've never been to therapy and you know you should and you just have no idea where to start, this could be a great thing for you. Because they also help you try to set you up for success after. So if you don't have a therapist going in, like they'll help you find a therapist. They also are really awesome at helping you with like resources in the community. A lot of people are financially struggling, maybe they are not able to work because of disabilities, physical disabilities, mental health disabilities, and they help you find the resources that are going to help you in your community as well, which is just awesome. I have so much like positive things to say about the program that I went to. And I just want to normalize doing something like this because it can be kind of uncomfortable to talk about, I think. But I really wanted to do these episodes because I know that there are people out there that think like, what if I did something like this? But I have no idea where to start. I don't know what that looks like. And I just wanted to be able to give you a little bit of information, you know? Sorry, my mouth is so dry. So I feel like I keep like lip smacking when I'm talking and ugh, I hate that noise. Okay, anyway, I just thank you so much for listening. Getting back into the swing of recording and releasing episodes has been huge for me. It has shown me so much of my own growth that I am not so overtaken with the anxiety of trying to produce something perfect. I know that this isn't perfect and the goal is not to be perfect. I still like a little bit roll my eyes in my head when I say stuff like that because I'm trying to believe it fully. I mostly believe it, but you know, it's still there. And that's the other thing is like, you're not going to come out of this program with like no issues. You're going to come out of the program with a lot of tools and skills and confidence to know that you can work through stuff. And like I said in the previous episode, a big part of it for me too was just like having my meds adjusted and realizing that that was playing such a huge part into why I was feeling so terrible. And once my brain felt better, I was able to use my skills more. So anyway, obviously I'm a big advocate for people struggling with their mental health or that have mental illnesses. And I just want to be here in any way I can to support. I would love if you followed me over on Instagram at TheMentallyIllMama. I would love if you gave a 5-star rating and review on Apple Podcasts for this podcast, The Mentally Ill Mama. That is how the reason that podcasters ask you to do that is not because we want you to tell us how awesome we are, although that is also cool. It's so that other people see you, because the more ratings and reviews a show has, the more Apple suggests it to people that are like browsing through podcasts. And I just feel very strongly that the things I have to share are really beneficial for a lot of people. And I am just thankful to have this platform. I always feel weird calling it that, because I think a platform is somebody that has like a lot of followers. But really, a platform is just a place that you get to share your message. And my message is, you're not alone. And there is a lot of support out there for you. And therapy is awesome. Taking meds can be very beneficial. And I'm really sorry that you have been mistreated by other people because of mental health related stuff. All right, that's all for today, guys. I love you so much. I hope you have an amazing week, and we'll see you soon. Thank you for listening to this podcast. That means so freaking much to me, and hopefully to you too. With every episode, my heart is for you, for your growth, connection, education, and of course, your mental health. If listening brought you joy, comfort, or understanding, I would love it if you leave us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts or wherever it is that you listen. You are thebomb.com, and don't you forget it. From the mentally ill mama to you, we'll see you next week.